Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Update on Capital Plan Q4 2017 Growth and Strategy KPIs. I will now hand over to your hosts, Filip Gorszewska, CFO, Michal Jan-Eczewski, Acting CEO, Katarzyna Sutkowska, CRO. Please, you may begin.
Thank you very much. My name is Michal Jan-Eczewski, and I am an Acting CEO of Alior Bank. Thank you very much for joining us today. The purpose of the call is to comment on the presentation we issued at night in the form of a current report, which is an update on our capital position, update on the growth guidance for 2017, and the update of our strategic KPIs regarding the change of certain assumptions. Before I give the floor to Filip, who will jump into details, let me mention that we decided to do this update as a result of a couple of events of very positive nature that we faced in Q4, which to some extent were public or transparent to the market knowledge regarding, for example, decisions of KNF. And basically in December, in the beginning of December, having that knowledge on the new or revised assumptions on the capital, we decided to speed up a little bit. And as we gave you the guidance during the last results presentation on holding to the 5-6 billion growth target, we went significantly above over December. So we decided to give you this information today. An important reason for the call and for completing the updates we announced is that we finished the work over IFRS 9. So there's quite a lot of information included in the presentation on this topic. So let me hand over to Filip Gorszewska, and just Filip, if I could ask you to go through the presentation and comment on the details.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and good morning to those who have dialed in from the U.S. So I will now run through the presentation in detail, and then we will move on to the Q&A session. So first of all, maybe let me also come back to what Michal mentioned, so just to more explain what was the purpose of the document. So we wanted to share with you a number of important factors that have affected, mostly positively affected our capital plan, so to somehow try to minimize the asymmetry of information between us and the market. The same applies to the growth, as Michal mentioned, that was simply significantly stronger in Q4 than we originally communicated and much above our strategic target. And likewise, there are a number of questions that we have been recently asked, first and foremost about IFRS 9, but also about the impact of the removal of the annual limit on the pension and disability contributions, which is expected to come into force on the 1st of January of next year, and also of the Monetary Policy Council's decision lowering the remuneration of the required reserve. So we were asked, so we just wanted to share with you to be fully transparent and not to provide information to only certain investors. Okay, I was going through the presentation, I will skip the summary part because we will go in detail through the through all parts. So first of all, just a summary of the changes in our capital plan compares to the original capital plan that was underlying the digital disruptor strategy implementation plan that we announced on the 4th of October. So first of all, we assumed we would receive from the regulator the other systemically important institutions buffer, which is 25 bps. This has not happened, luckily for us. So now we expect to receive it in 1 year, so in Q4 of 2018. And this is 25 bps to our capital adequacy ratios, to our capital requirements. So this is very positive. Next thing, in our capital plan, we maybe too conservatively assumed that the systemic buffer from the 1st of January 2018 would be 4%. So now it's clear after the regulator's guidelines issued in December 2017 that it will be 3%. So this is 1 percentage point to our TCR. Then in terms of advanced measurement approach, so the way we are measuring the operational risk requirements, we assumed we would get clearance from the regulator in December 2017, and this has happened. We also assumed that the positive impact would be roughly 25 basis points. And this is indeed around 25 basis points in accordance with our latest estimate. What we have, however, hadn't assumed in our original capital plan, and what we are assuming now, when you look at the Tier 1 and TCR ratios that we are now providing as our targets, this is the next phases of the AMA exercise, which is lowering the floor, because it's currently has been set by the regulator at 80%, and also extending AMA to the ex-BPH activities and our Romanian branch. So this should give us another 20, that's what we expect, 20 bps in 2019 and 26 bps in 2020. So this is not cumulative, so in total this is 25 bps now, then another 20 bps in 2019 and 26 bps in 2020. So huge gain for us if we are able to complete this project. And this was originally in our original capital plan. We have not taken that into account. Other developments worth mentioning, of course, just to remind you of the Q3 profit, which significantly exceeded the assumptions in our capital plan and also the market consensus. The difference was mostly attributable to, first of all, the gain on sale of NPLs, and secondly also to the BPH integration process, which has gone much better than originally planned in terms of both the integration cost and synergies, and we released a provision of 21 million on a net basis in Q3, and hence we recorded a profit that was much higher than we originally anticipated. Then in terms of IFRS 9 impact, as Michał mentioned, this is actually in itself also one of the reasons to announce this, to let's say come up with this communication last night, because we also wanted to provide some kind of early indication according to our preliminary estimates of what the impact of IFR 9 would be. So we appreciate we are a bit faster to do it than most other banks, so hope you'll appreciate that. We are not providing too many details, but what we are providing should give you probably a good view on what the impact of IFR 9 in case of Alior Bank will be. So that's in 2018 that's 20 bps, in 2019 that's 24 bps, and in 2020 that's 42 bps in terms of our Tier 1 ratio. And that's the figures I mentioned are cumulative, so that's in accordance with the 5-year amortization scheme envisaged in CRR. Worth mentioning is that we had not disclosed that previously, but just to be fully transparent, this is also an event that improved our capital projections in some way. It's the impact of IFRS 9 on the 1st of January of 2018 in terms of the deferred tax impact. So the initial estimate that we came up with yesterday internally is roughly in line with the assumptions that we had in October when we announced the strategy implementation plan. So the total impact from an accounting perspective, there is no difference, there is no huge difference. Where the difference is, the positive difference, that relates to how it's treated for the purpose of calculating our Tier 1 and TCR ratios, and namely the deferred tax element, because we previously assumed that the deferred tax element would not be would have to be excluded from calculating our own funds, because in general, if the deferred tax assets are greater than 10% of your own funds, you simply cannot take this into account. However, the transitional provisions relating to IFRS 9 implementation that in case of this IFRS 9 related deferred tax assets, you simply do not decrease the own funds by this figure, yeah, that stems from IFRS 9 implementation. So this is positive. The reason why on the 1st of January 2018 the impact is higher than if you would look at this amortization scheme pattern envisaged by the regulation, so 5%, 15%, 30%. So if you look at it, 20 bps, 24 bps, 42 bps, this somehow might seem a bit odd. But this is actually due to a different factor, and namely, which is also related to deferred tax, but this is a completely different topic. And this is namely an adverse tax impact on the 1st of January of 2018. And from an accounting perspective, again, this doesn't change our equity or our net results in any way. However, what happens is that basically, to put it in simple words, we are releasing certain provisions, but then again, we are again lowering the book value amount to fair value. So this doesn't have any impact, but it has a tax impact. So basically, we have to pay tax because we are reversing the tax deductible expenses that we previously recorded, and we have a deferred tax asset on the other hand. Yeah? So this is how it will work also at other banks, but this is why on the 1st of January we have a proportionally higher hit than 5% because of this tax, this negative tax treatment. But this is, as I said, this is a preliminary estimate, which may change. It has not been audited yet, and the final impact of IFRS 9 will be communicated in our annual report, which we will publish on the 8th of March. Then another important area. This is what we already communicated to in some ways after our Q3 results announcement, but But that the original assumptions that we had when we communicated the strategy implementation plan, we assumed that we would, in order to maintain our Tier 1 and TCR ratios at a level of at least 50 bps above the minimum regulatory requirements, we would utilize the guarantee line that we have from PZU, and the impact on Tier 1 of that would be 230 million. And then we said we would consider replacing that instrument with securitization of our corporate portfolio. So now it's clear that due to all of those positive developments that I mentioned, that we don't actually need to use any of those instruments in any way to maintain our buffers at a safe level above the regulatory minimums. So this is not needed anymore. So the PZU line is there. So this gives us actually a quite a huge buffer just in case we would experience any adverse developments or we would simply want to speed up growth or anything like that. And this is a great instrument, especially that we can use it at any time for any period and for any amount, and it doesn't cost us anything unless we utilize it. Yeah? So it's really something that provides additional security from our capital position perspective. Likewise, securitization, we are still considering, but we have trimmed down the amount that we envisaged. So currently the gain on Tier 1 would be roughly 120 million according to the plan that we have now. But this is only to if we determine that it will make sense from an economic perspective to use this instrument to speed up growth. Yeah? So if we conclude that the impact on our ROE would be positive of such an exercise, we would then do it sometime probably during 2018. But this is not something that doesn't have any impact on our base plan. Yeah, so that's something that we are simply considering to do, and also to build, to build capabilities for using such instruments in the future to manage our capital position. Also, you know, in the future, we will probably consider also securitizing our leasing portfolio. This is another transaction we could do sometime, but definitely not in the upcoming few months. Then in terms of Tier 2, the sub-debt issues, so we issued 750 million zloty in Q4 as planned, as we communicated, and very successfully actually. So this is what we concluded. The latest issue was concluded in early December, but we originally planned to issue another 200 million in 2018. But now, especially in view of the TCR requirements going down, it's clear we definitely don't need to issue any more sub-debt in the strategy time horizon. So we are not, we don't need and we don't plan to issue any sub-debt until 2020. So that's another development. Then in terms of the Tier 1 ratio and the TCR ratio, so we are worth mentioning that is that despite our strong growth, we are growing our ratios at such pace that even despite the regulatory requirements increasing, we are still at those safe levels above. And until the end of 2020, our target is to have a Tier 1 ratio of 15% and a TCR ratio of 17%. And that would be excluding any dividends that would be paid in 2020. Yes, so that's significantly above the levels that are currently envisaged as the minimum for 75% dividend payout ratio in accordance with the regulator's guidelines. So that's for end of 2020. So when if there would be a decision to pay out dividend in 2020, we would need to base the decision on actually the slightly lower amounts, because that would need to be after Q1 of 2020. But still, as you see, the buffers are really strong. Yeah? So definitely subject to the regulator's guidance, and we should clearly have dividend capacity already in 2020, so from the 2019 profit. Then in terms of the growth, so those positive developments that mostly occurred in Q4, they allowed us to speed up growth, and this happened mostly in December, actually, so in the second part of Q4. And we were actually able to record a growth that in total for the entire year exceeded the top of the range of our strategic target of 5 to 6 billion zloty per year, and also of the estimate of the when we provided the guidance even after the Q3 results announcement. So this is a very positive development. So we estimate now, as of yesterday, that we recorded a gross loan book growth of 6.8 billion zloty throughout the entire year. Worth mentioning is also that our deposit campaign aimed at increasing our liquidity has attracting new retail customers has continued to be successful over Q4, and we increased our liquidity even despite this very high growth in Q4. We further increased our LCR ratio to 121% at the end of the year, which is significantly above the increased regulatory minimum from the 1st of January 2018, which went up from 80 to 100%. Okay, now let me move on to the first part. So this is the impact of certain events and factors on our strategic KPIs. So first of all, this is IFRS 9 implementation, and this is a purely technical adjustment. So this is not something that changes our profitability, actual profitability in any way, because we don't expect IFRS 9 to have any significant impact on our net profit. It's just that we simply, first of all, on the 1st of January of 2018, so last week, a part of our equity has disappeared because of the increased impairment allowance, and like at other banks, and this has simply a purely technical impact, yeah, on our KPI. So we had to adjust those to reflect now the new reality in which we are functioning under. Secondly, there were two negative events that occurred, which impacted the entire banking sector and not only the banking sector. So first of all, this is the bill introducing the removal of the annual limit on the pension and disability contributions. It's now expected to come into force on the 1st of January of next year. So this was something that we clearly had not predicted and had not assumed in the original strategy implementation plan, and those are additional costs that need to be taken into account. So it's fair just to communicate what kind of costs we are talking about here. And secondly, also that's maybe less of not as material impact as some of the other factors, but the Monetary Policies Council's resolution on the 5th of December, which lowers the remuneration of the required reserve from 1.35% to 0.5%. So from the 1st of January 2018. So just to present on how what's the impact of all of those factors. So we presented a table which clearly shows how each of those factors affect each of our KPIs. This is presented in this first column on slide 11. And then very importantly, because we have been asked very frequently about what's our sensitivity to interest rate changes, and also what we clearly communicated a number of times is that because we wanted to separate the impact of any positive macro developments from the managerial effort, we assumed very conservatively that there would be only one interest rate hike in the strategy time horizon, so till 2020, and that it would happen in the beginning of 2019. This clearly is very different from the current market consensus. So we just wanted to present, to be fully transparent, what our KPIs would look like had we assumed the current market consensus in terms of interest rate development. So the current market consensus, as we at least interpreted the yield curve, is one interest rate hike in 2018 at the end of July, then two hikes in 2019 in March and September, and then last but not least the one interest rate hike at the end of June 2020. So this is in total this is 100 bps of interest rate hike. But worth mentioning is that this last hike would happen in mid 2020. So for example, the impact on our ROE would be only let's say 75 bps in 2020 plus roughly half of this last interest rate hike. Yeah? And so in all our KPIs, if we would take into account all of those adjustments, would move in terms of ROE from 14.1% to 16.2%, in terms of net interest margin from 5.1% to 5.3%, in terms of cost to income, this would stay unchanged. In terms of cost of risk, that would go up from 1.6 to 1.7%, and then obviously annual gross loan book growth that remains unchanged. Worth reiterating is what I said in the beginning, is that the change in terms of IFRS 9 here, that's not any change that, for example, increases the actual cost of risk or actual net interest margin. That's only a purely technical change because the denominator simply, for example, in terms of cost of risk, the denominator goes down because our gross loan amount goes down because certain exposures, for example, those that are classified under purchase or originated credit impaired, move into being accounted for at fair value. So this is why their gross amount decreases. So this is a purely technical change. Yeah? It doesn't actually increase, obviously, the actual cost of risk. So this is the full presentation. So now I guess we can move on to the Q&A session, and we will be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you for holding until we have the first question. The first question comes from Mr. Giulado, Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. A couple of questions from my side. First, on January, I don't know if you can disclose this, but on January 1st, can you tell us how much lower your equity will be, or at least what the absolute impact on equity will be? Because obviously on capital it's phased in, as you suggested, but we don't know what day one impact is. And also related to that, you disclosed the impact up to 2020 of IFRS 9 on capital. I was wondering if you can give us what the total BIPs would be up to 2023. Then another question, in terms of assuming that we were not forecasting for IFRS 9, is it fair to then assume that based compared to our previous capital ratios, we should lower them by, for example, in 2018, the 20 basis points of IFRS 9 impact, but also increase them by 25 basis points because of your advanced measurement approach, and like that every year? Thank you.
Yes, so in terms of IFRS 9, I'm afraid we cannot provide more information at this time. As I mentioned, those figures are not yet final, they have not been audited, and the IFRS 9 implementation project is still underway, so that's as far as we can go. And obviously you can calculate, very roughly what the nominal amount will be, but we are not providing that right now. Yes, so apologies, but you need to wait until the 8th of March. In terms of your second question, so yeah, absolutely. So all of those factors are shown here separately. So if you look at what we provided in the IFRS 9 section, that's the IFRS 9 only. So that's not in any way combined with the AMA impact. Yeah?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Kamil Strzemiski, PKO Investment Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having my question. I'm looking at the last table in your presentation right now, and I'm still having trouble understand what is the difference in your assumptions when it comes to IFRS 9. Because having in mind that in the presentation from November, you have included already some impact of IFRS 9 on this ROE targets. For example, you have a chart that you presented in November which shows the impact of IFRS 9 on cost of risk. I wondered why, what has changed that, and maybe simple, does the 14.1% ROE target, strategic target that you informed about 2 months ago included any impact of IFRS 9, or does this 14.1 assume that there is no impact on IFRS 9 on equity?
Okay. So let me once again explain. So we actually, we were transparent on that. We explained that very clearly upon our strategy implementation plan announcement. So obviously, because until the 31st December of 2017, all of our accounting and all of the KPIs that we provided had to be under the old accounting regulations. Yes. Yeah? So in order to be consistent, and this is also in order to show show the KPIs at that time, we could not include the impact of IFRS 9, because then simply we would have figured for 2017, so for example after Q3 of 2017, and then the strategic targets that would not be comparable, yeah, because they would be simply on a different basis. So we included the impact of IFRS 9 in terms of our capital requirements, of our capital plan, but not in terms of how we are calculating the KPIs, because then we would not be comparable with the results that we were reporting in 2017. So what we are doing now is simply because we are moving into a different reality now, starting from Q1 of 2018, we are now translating the KPIs into this new reality under IFRS 9, simple as that.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, so last time it was included in expected net income through, for example, this cost of risk in solvency ratios, but
in just,
ROE.
Just let me reiterate. There is no material impact of IFRS 9 on our net income. There will be no. The only impact is on our first of all on our capital requirements, and this is what we had assumed in the, obviously in our original capital plan. And this is although as I explained, it will be now a bit lower on the, in 2018 that we expected, but overall it will broadly it will be the same. But it doesn't affect our net income. So this increase in the cost of risk, this is purely technical, yeah? Because the denominator in the formula, the denominator decreases. This is why the cost of risk increases.
Okay.
But the cost of risk in terms of the impairment allowance that would be recorded, for example, in 2018 or 2019 or 2020, this doesn't change. Yeah? So the only change, from an accounting perspective, the change in its entirety is recorded on the 1st of January of 2018, on the transition date.
Oh, thank you for that. And my second question is on slide 9, so the sales of loans this year, because I just prepared my assumptions, and I think that last time the guidance was that the sale of loans in fourth quarter would be rather below what you are selling, what you have been selling on average. And now it seems you have had a much stronger sales of loans. And I wonder what was the trigger, and if this was all this lack of this OC buffer, at what moment in time you acquired the knowledge that you will not have an OC buffer this year, and what sort of loans you decided to sell, I think, most likely in December, end of the year?
What I said is that the sale of NPLs, this actually occurred in Q3. So what I said is that we recorded this 190 million net profit in Q3, in Q3 of 2017, and this was also due to this extraordinarily high gain on sale of NPLs. So I just repeated what we already communicated during our Q3 results announcement. So there is no new, there are no new developments here, and we didn't we have not mentioned anything about any NPL sales in the Q4.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let me comment on the growth. So that the growth was across the whole business. So almost all business lines contributed to this. And we basically we took certain decisions to speed up already in November, but the most of the closings of the transactions happened in December, obviously. So there were several triggers. So capital things related to the capital was just one of them, but simply we saw a lot of good opportunities in the market, and we decided to make a good use of them regarding a very good capital position. So from the business perspective, it looked the way that we in the corporate sector we had a really good pipeline. And in the retail sector, we saw some opportunities to speed up both through our own sales network and through the intermediaries, and feeling very comfortable with the capital position, we just decided to do that.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Alan Webroon, Société Générale. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for the call. Could you sort of humour us and just sort of, from reading this presentation, it looks at what you're telling us at the moment is that by the end of 2020, you will have had a 42-bit negative impact from IFRS 9, and offsetting that, you will have had a 25 plus 20 plus 26 impact from AMA. I mean, is that Is that how I read it, or have I got it wrong?
Yeah, I mean, broadly speaking, yes, that would be
okay.
Probably correct. Yeah.
Okay. So, but apart from the fact that you've done, you know, you've made some opportunistic lending in Q4, because when you reported Q3, you said that the loan growth in Q4 would be lower because you were getting relatively close to your target. So you clearly changed your mind, you know, after you reported Q3 in terms of the accelerated growth, because it's not what you said when you gave your 3Q numbers. But then you now have a stronger capital position, and yet you're not changing your volume targets going mm-hmm. forward. So can you explain that a little bit to us?
Sure. I mean, look, we proved well that, you know, at very good, you know, profitability levels, we may grow even higher than 6 billion a year. But, you know, we don't have this confidence in the market regarding the market situation to increase the target. Just simply, you know, at this moment, what we can say is that, you know, we saw extremely good, you know, market conditions to speed up the growth, and we'll be observing the situation in the market. We are very much focused on the profitability, so and reaching our ROE targets. So we hold to our, you know, firm assumption that we won't grow at the cost of, you know, lower profitability. So we are optimizing on the number of KPIs, not on a single KPI. So we'll see. But this quarter proves well that if the market conditions are good enough, Alior Bank can grow even faster than our strategic target is.
Yeah, so let me also give you a bit more flavor what actually triggered our, let's say, more appetite for growth, and that's namely the execution of the PZU guarantee line, because until the beginning of November we could not assume, you know, we were not 100% sure we would actually enter into this agreement, yeah, until it was signed. So we had to plan a bit more conservatively, but then once we executed the agreement, we, you know, we could feel much more comfortable. And that's basically when we probably at somewhere around this point in time we decided to accelerate growth. And then obviously the other positive events after that reinforced this approach. Yeah?
Okay. Can I ask in addition whether the sort of PZU strategy plan that was presented, I think, last night. Is there anything in there that has made you change your view in terms of the returns that you could make? For example, I think they talked a little bit about, you know, cross-selling and selling insurance premiums through their banking networks. I mean, if I think back to the initial plan, you know, you had a blue sky ROE scenario, which I think was 16% against the sort of 14.1. If you've got sort of these accords coming in, some non-banking stuff, but you seem to have said that it's not related to that in the presentation. So, you know, have you got on top of the 16.2% you're now telling us you can make in 2020 another 2% in reserve? If you get the blue sky scenario that you were thinking about, or, you know, is part of that blue sky scenario now in that 16.2%?
Mm-hmm. Regarding the additional upsides, as we mentioned, we have a couple of projects that we included in the guidance on the cost side, but not on the revenue side. One of them is Bankowo platform that we kicked off already in Q4, and the first transactions happened over that platform. So obviously, you know, it's a venture project, and we cannot be We have not. We don't have, you know, full confidence regarding, you know, any revenue forecast. But of course, it won't be zero, right? So we assume the upside, the total upside, and those additional projects, including Bankowo, which is the largest one, between 0 and 1.9 additional percentage point added to the ROE target. So this does not change. Regarding the strategy of PZU, then it's fair to say that, so first of all, let me congratulate our colleagues because I think it was executed in an excellent way. Then it's fair to say that it wasn't a change of the strategy, it was the update of the strategy, and we worked with PZU very closely on a number of initiatives within the current cooperation. So we didn't find anything new or surprising from our perspective, although I must say, you know, that there were a lot of interesting news related to the technology approach and technology ambitions, and now we are analyzing this, and perhaps we'll, you know, we'll enhance the cooperation within the proposed framework. But in principle, you know, we don't recognize anything that would that would change the picture that we know very well and that we developed together with PZU over the last months.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Maciej Marcinowski from Trigon. Please go ahead.
Hello. My first question is about your NIM assumption. In the new strategy, you assumed 75 bps more of interest hikes. So why your NIM is growing only by 10 bps? So that would imply your sensitivity to interest rates, like the lowest in the market. And I don't think you are perceived as such, because it's on growing from 5.1 to 5.2.
That's simply because also we assume that the interest on our deposits would have to increase, and that's a change from 5.1 to 5.2. That's simply the result of our calculations. But
other banks says that their sensitivity is from 20% to even 40% on interest rates, and here we can see only 15.
Yeah. So as I said, you know, that's on the one hand, the interest on our loan portfolio increases, but on the other hand, the interest on our deposits increases. So you know, if it would change the same way, it would actually have no impact on net interest margin. Yes, so we are assuming it would have impact, but definitely not very significant.
Okay, but in the same time, your ROE is growing by 100 bps from 14.1 to 15.1, and I don't think that just 10 bps in NIM would imply such growth.
Yeah, those are simply the figures that we have. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so my second question is about the IFRS 9 impact. Just technically,
excuse me, if I may refer to that, because you know, I mean, that's a simple output of the model. You know, regarding the, I don't find, you know, this surprising, right? Regarding the leverage effect, right? So we have an increase of net interest margin and the fall of cost to income. We are talking about the ROE, right? So we are talking about the leverage effect here that generates a higher upside versus the initial scenario. So I don't find really, you know, this output counterintuitive.
No, just according to my calculations, you know, the 10 bps growth in NIM would imply some 50 bps growth in ROE, not 100.
But then you have a follow-up cost-to-income ratio by 1 percentage point as well.
Yeah, but you know that I would have to, I would have to look at the model. It's probably also a bit of rounding involved here, so that's probably a greater change than from 5.1 to 5.2. Yeah, if not rounded, but in general, as Michał said, yeah. So any 10 bps in terms of net interest margin, that has a huge impact on ROE, and that's simply should be clear.
All right, then. So maybe let's move to the second question. Just technically, I would like to ask about the amortization of IFRS impact. Would it be visible only on your capital ratios, or even at the equity level on the balance sheet? Or we should see the impact on the equity would be full.
Absolutely. So on the 1st of January, so in terms of accounting, on the 1st of January 2018, so the impact is full. Yeah? So there is no amortization there. It's only from the terms in terms of calculating the capital requirement.
Okay. I thought so. Okay. So thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Darius Goski, BZWBK. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. If I may ask a question on relating to page 6, page 7 and 8, I believe the minimum dividend payout thresholds refer to lower payouts, but doesn't really matter. But what I wanted to ask is, because you seem to have a comfortable buffer margin, equity buffer margin, is this rational to expect you to start paying dividend earlier than from 2019 profit, or is it premature?
I think it's far premature to comment on this. I mean, this is purely an illustration. So we can't know at this moment KNF expectations into over 2019. So this is on the current conditions basis simulation, you know, how the situation would look like if we were with the same conditions in 2020.
Okay, so you hold on to your early guidance of the first payoff in 2020. On the AMA impact, will this be visible in first Q already, or will this be spread over time, the impact of this on your capital ratios?
Yes. Basically, so in terms of this first phase of the project, which was completed, this should be already visible right now. Yes, so in Q1.
And I remember from your previous presentation that you also were expecting a reasonably high contribution from SME support factor. I understand that it's still in place. You're just not mentioning in this presentation because the assumptions have not changed. Is this correct?
Absolutely. This is correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Anna Machel, JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. So a couple of questions, please. Firstly, given your higher capital position, a more comfortable capital position, would you consider any small acquisitions to kind of accelerate growth, or are you just happy with organic growth? And another question also related to M&A, but from the point of view of Pekao, when could we expect to hear some sort of an update on your cooperation scenarios with them? And the final question, kind of in terms of your plan implementation, apart from obviously what you have already discussed today, sort of what do you see as the main challenges and opportunities for the implementation specifically for 2018? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anna. So let me answer the questions. Regarding the acquisitions, we are not following any opportunities, acquisition opportunities at this moment. Please remember that the acquisitions is a part of our strategy, so we will keep monitoring the the market. But simply at this particular moment, we don't recognize any opportunities that would be worth doing a deeper analysis. Regarding the second question, I cannot comment at this moment. Regarding the third question, I think there are several challenges regarding the strategy implementation. One of them is the speed of rotation of the competence in our IT function. So we, on a very constant basis, we are prioritizing our IT initiatives regarding the biggest upsides we can generate in a relatively short period of time, and this is a very ongoing works. Second, of course, there's always, and that's a very, very daily management of the business, there's always a question between, growth and profitability. So this is why I mentioned we are trying to optimize on a number of parameters, not on a single one, and the trade-offs are difficult sometimes. This is always a challenge within the very daily management of especially of the corporate business. Third, the pace of the transformation of the corporate business and the pace of digitalization. So, of course, we would like to be in the final stage of our corporate business as soon as possible, but then this is a process, right? So we have an extremely strong focus on SMEs, but this of course does not exclude doing larger financings, and we need to balance here, regarding the growth profile, the pace of growth, and the impact on the current and future profitability. So these are, these are the challenges we face. Still, I guess this is a pretty comfortable situation because this is, choosing between only good options regarding the growth of the business. Then, of course, let's say that a little bit of challenge are the things that have a lasting effect on the cost side, which is the introduction of the new bill on the social contributions. And this is why we wanted to be very transparent with this, because there would be a lot of questions, and I not only to Alior Bank, but to other banks on the market regarding the impact. So these are the things we are dealing with. So no serious threats, rather very operational management and challenges related to this. And the market situation is very very supporting. So as long as we don't see any significant turbulence in the economy, the situation should look extremely positive.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question from Mr. Gelado, Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
If I could just ask a follow-up question on the higher-than-expected loan growth in the fourth quarter, if you can maybe comment on what sectors were driving that in particular. What did you find that was particularly attractive? Was it retail, mortgages, or corporate? Thank you.
As mentioned before, the additional growth happened over almost all business lines. So it was very balanced between retail and corporate. So we speeded up with the cash loans. We speeded up with corporate financings, smaller, larger. So there's no, definitely it's not the situation that additional growth comes from a couple of transactions. It comes from a very large number of transactions, both on the retail and corporate side.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have a question from Matthias Krupa, Erste. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening. Sorry that the question is not connected to the presentation, but using the occasion and the strategy presented by PZU yesterday, I would like to ask whether, in your opinion, it is allowed or technically possible for two banks to have fully integrated CRM system without full integration of the banks? Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a very good question regarding the presentation. I think, you know, there are obvious constraints related to the banking law regarding sharing any databases, but I think, you know, what PZU communicated should be rather seen as sharing the data that does not have to that can be anonymous and can be used in terms of doing, you know, big data analytics in a fully compliant way. So it's definitely too far going interpretation of what they communicated, that there would be a single CRM and a single client management, you know, approach and databases. It's just legally not allowed to share this data between, you know, between the banks. But then, of course, you know, the situation is more complex, yes, because we have PSD2 regulations that will change the picture a little bit, and you know, well, the clients may allow for, you know, for the banks to see their accounts in other banks and so on and so forth. So it's not a very, you know, one-dimensional approach that could be used, but it's far too early to, you know, to comment on details, because this is, you know, this is what they presented, you know, yesterday. I can say that we have a lot of cooperation in terms of insurance investment products, and on a very constant basis we are analyzing various projects, but what they presented yesterday is something that would need to be developed still by, you know, by the companies within the group, and when we have it ready, then we'll be in a position to, you know, to comment on the details of these solutions.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We currently have no question. Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you that if you wish to ask a question, you can press 01 on your telephone keypad. Once again, let me remind you that if you wish to ask a question, you need to press 01 on your telephone keypad. We have no further question. I give the floor back to the speakers for the conclusion.
So I think you know, the presentation was quite substantial in the content, and the questions added additional value. So thank you very much for participating in the conference. We wish you a happy New Year. And we'll hear each other at the press conference after Q4 results. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, by the way.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.